In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Paraphrasing just a bit here, but it's been said that trust is the oil that greases the wheels of society. Whether that's a broader field like commerce or a smaller scale within or among organizations. And at the risk of managing to offend some people, the October 4th nationwide test of the emergency alert system was quite an example of trust, or lack of it, in our government. And the thing is, we have certainly seen enough out of our own government that it was at least possible that it might be more than a test. You can't blame people. Except that with this particular test, it really was just a routine, standard annual test. These tests have been done since most people have been alive, and I can assure you the government informed stations this was coming months ago, along with a specific date and time, and yet all over social media there was no end of people just sure something nefarious was afoot. Conspiracies ran from 5G was going to activate something in the vaccines to spying on your phone and installing spyware, and on it went. At the root of it was lack of trust. What was the government really up to? People were actually shutting off their phones to avoid it. Some wrapped their phones in tinfoil or other protections. Another said they traveled up into the mountains past any 5G towers to escape the test signal. One person I saw said the government will try anything and everything to access our private info to download more surveillance onto our devices. So he or she not only foil wrapped their phone, but also things like their Bluetooth headphones, unplugged the Wi-Fi router, and anything that took a Wi-Fi signal, including their laptops. They said, as if you couldn't guess, they do not trust the government or FEMA. Now, think of that for a moment. They don't trust an agency specifically designed to respond to and to alert and to help people during a disaster. I couldn't help wonder how that person would have responded to an actual, real alert of danger. Would they believe it? Or would they think it's some sinister plot to steer everyone in a direction and, well, God knows what? But why isn't that agency or other government agencies trusted? And the answer to that is obvious. They've done very little to earn trust. And more importantly, when trust is broken, they have done nothing to repair it. They just continue on without one shred of remorse and expect you to trust them next time, or worse, they don't care if you ever trust them again. Trust is the oil that greases the wheels of society, yes, but one way I like to think of trust is it's a process of you deciding whether to cross a bridge that someone else built. The government hasn't built any bridges, and they haven't repaired any of the ones they've torn down. And this basic trust in government is important, because at some point, there is going to be a real emergency. And now we've got a lot of people who switched off the emergency alerts on their phone. Last year, the emergency alert system failed to generate tone and or the verbal alert warning on a number of radio stations. Personally, I would be much more worried about a failed test than an annual scheduled routine one. We should be able to trust our government. It is up to them to build the bridges, and merely assuring us that the bridge is totally fine, come on over, just doesn't cut it. On today's show, we'll be talking about trust and especially about some election solutions to rebuild trust. I'd like to welcome Mark Thielman back to the show. Mark is a former candidate for governor here in Oregon. He is currently involved with several issues we want to talk to him about today. Mark, it is great to talk to you.
Well, it's good to be back.
Yeah, so you're involved in the effort to get school choice on the November 2024 ballot. You're involved in the election fraud case, which is scheduled for a hearing in the Ninth Circuit in December. And you might be running for Secretary of State last we talked. Any updates on any of those that you'd care to mention before we get into things?
Well, as things are shaping out, it's important down in CD4, Congressional District 4, that we don't let Val Hoyle run uncontested. So I've kind of shifted my focus to making sure that if no one else steps up, that I will be doing that. And, I can't think of a better candidate to attack and undermine and defeat. than Val Hoyle. She's very corrupt.
Oh, she's horribly corrupt. And it's like the longer she's in office, the more we learn. And it's surprising how none of this managed to surface in the last election there. Well, good luck on that one if you choose to get your hat in that ring. So the main reason we wanted to have you on was to talk not just about election fraud, as I mentioned, you're involved in that case, but also about election solutions. How do we stop cheating and have secure elections? And that's something that you're also part of, is finding those solutions. And what so much of this really comes down to is, how do we get trust back into the system? Because we should be able to trust our elections. Everyone should be able to say they trust the elections, even if you don't get the results that you wanted, and perhaps especially if you don't get the results you wanted. Your candidate may not have won, but you believe that the other side won fairly and squarely. I think that's something we should all want. Is there any other way to look at this? Is that if you can't trust how they were elected, then you can't trust what they do once in office?
True story. You know, it's a catch-22. And you understand that the wheel goes round and round, but it's very, very consistent across the nation, multiple states, even in states where election integrity is less controversial or less of an issue. The majority of Americans believe that there's fraudulent dealings in our elections. So that's a critical piece to pushing back, especially here in Oregon, the epicenter of election and mail-in ballot fraud. Is this system here. So you push back by educating people. So, for example, the Secretary of State, she's out resurrecting Shamia Fagan's cartoon character commercials. She calls it pre-bunking, and this is very specific. She sent out an email to thousands of Oregonians, basically talking about myself and some of the work we've done in Battleground with the election lawsuit. She talked about how, you know, there's been these frivolous lawsuits and a myriad of public records requests, which, as you know, I was very involved in promoting that with people, and it worked. So their response is to resurrect commercials made by a proven corrupt Secretary of State who resigned in disgrace, caught red-handed being corrupt with the most evil aspects of government dealings, aka with the cartels and LaMotta and all that. So they're going to they're on a pre-bunking campaign. So that must be met. So what we're doing is a whole group of election integrity-minded people, as you know. And one of the things we're doing is going around and offering trainings to people on how you hand count ballots and systematically, and so that people can go in there, they can learn how it's done and how efficient and how effective and how accurate it is. Because our Secretary of State saying that we could never hand count all these ballots. It just can't be done. Well, that's not true.
No.
And there's another pre-bunking campaign. It's called Educating People and Growing Awareness.
Yeah. Well, and educating people is definitely what we want to do today. And as I said, we should be able to trust our government with a healthy dose of skepticism, of course. And we're going to continue that line of discussion for a bit when we come back with Mark Thielman. And then we're going to look at some of the solutions that are out there to our broken election system. Stay with us. Mark Thielman is one of Oregon's most active activists, and he is our guest today. He is the lead petitioner to get real school choice on the ballot in 2024, and he is also the lead plaintiff in an election integrity lawsuit. And election integrity and election solutions are the main focus for today's discussion. You know, we were talking in that last segment about trust and how you can't trust a government if you can't trust how they got elected. But even when the election seems on the up and up, sometimes you still can't trust those in office. And one such person, Kevin McCarthy, was just forced out of his office. And, you know, I just never liked him. I never trusted him. He always came across too much. He's just a little too slick. But really, when it came right down to it, the reason I didn't trust him is it was entirely due to the fact that his words did not line up with his actions. He made a lot of promises to get that speakership position, but then he worked harder, it seemed, to coddle the Democrats and give them the money they wanted. But conservatives and what was important to them, including not spending money, not so much. He completely caved on the debt ceiling debate last time, and then this last time he slipped in a secret side deal with Democrats to give Ukraine another $6 billion to keep the Democrats happy, and then didn't tell his fellow Republicans about it until after it passed. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people talking about this on social media. I've listened to conservative pundits and read some of their articles, and a lot of them are very upset that he was removed and seeing this as a bad thing and that we shouldn't fight amongst ourselves. And I get that. But at the same time, if you don't get rid of the bad apples out of the party, then how can you trust the party?
Well, you know, excellent point. I mean, Kevin McCarthy let Nancy Pelosi keep her House Speaker office. And his justification was, well, you know, when so-and-so was in there before her, she let him keep his office.
Maybe he just didn't want to have to fumigate it.
Well, of course. And my point is, this kind of statesmanship, if that's what it's called, that's called uniparty. And in this day and age, you can't risk those things. You know, if you believe in what you stand for, like McCarthy says he does, then you toe the line, period. If you believe that we shouldn't be funding the Ukraine war, then you don't put a $6 billion side deal in. And it didn't work either, because obviously he and Matt Gaetz had issues for a couple of months. McCarthy didn't end the investigation against Gaetz on that escort gate or whatever that is, the details of flying somebody who was under the age of 21, I believe, across state boundaries. And so I'm giving people inside information. That's why it seems so personal between Matt Gaetz and McCarthy. So it's a double whammy, because you gave $6 billion to the Democrats, you gained nothing, and except to exacerbate the uniparty deal and violate your word to your own conservatives. And that was a bridge too far. So Matt Gaetz did, in my opinion, the right thing. It's a very courageous thing, a very risky thing. And he called McCarthy to the carpet, and the Democrats were all too eager to take McCarthy out, the same McCarthy they just cut a deal with. And this is why you don't negotiate with these people. You don't cut deals. The Democrats don't cut them on the Republican side. If I got news for people, they don't.
No.
And Republicans keep thinking that we're going to be magnanimous and cut deals so that then they'll see and then they'll work with us when we're not in power. That is not true. History begs that out. So,
as far as the Democrats are concerned, you're absolutely right on that, because 3 days earlier, he had had that secret midnight deal with the Democrats. And then 3 days later, not a single one of them voted to keep him there. So they got what they wanted and then stabbed him in the back. So, yeah, you can't trust that. But, you know, another one of the reasons why I never really liked McCarthy and the reason he got the speakership in the first place is because he controls the money for elections. If someone doesn't support him, guess who doesn't get money from the Republican caucus in the next election? I mean, it's a good way to keep your power, but a horrible way to earn trust. Trust is earned. Trust is never bought. And it just really came down to, if he wanted to keep that position, all he had to do was live up to his word, and he didn't keep those promises that he had made.
No, and that's my whole point. You know, it's at the end of the day, it comes down to, are you a conservative? And McCarthy had his time. He was tested. He's not. Now, you know, there's a lot of apologists who say, well, you know, they only have the House. They don't have the White House. They don't have the Senate. The House runs the purse strings. I don't know if the American people have forgotten that. Without the House, there is no budget. So McCarthy had tremendous leverage that he could use. And if he stuck to his guns, we'd have an 8% cut in funding for the next, you know, 45 days, and we would have funding for the border wall, which apparently Biden's going to build anyway. So I rest my case.
Yeah.
And again, we can't afford uniparty politics. We have to be conservatives. And we have to bring conservative policy and conservative behavior to positions of leadership. And I'm hoping we'll get that in Steve Scalise or Jim Jordan. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, and that would be nice. I like both of those people. In fact, I would have rather have had either one of those over McCarthy, for sure. Just shifting to elections now, I think a lot of the discussion about fixing elections really boils down to, how do we fix politics and government? And I think so much of that is the money that drives all of it. There is no $7 trillion private company out there, but there is a $7 trillion government with no brakes on spending. And until we can fix the giant holes in the public trough through which so much money pours out to donors and to ideological allies, I think too many people are just more than willing to commit all kinds of fraud to get the election results that they wanted. If people are willing to risk jail to rob a bank of $1 million, imagine what they would certainly risk if it meant a million times a million. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, you know, we're seeing it playing out in real time, in just what you're talking about, that the government is the biggest player on the block. And the one advantage government has over corporations, it sets regulations. So corporations and the government have now partnered together, and there's no longer the balance of powers that the founders expected there to be. Mm-hmm. All the professional associations, even down to something like the Better Business Bureau, it's all been co-opted by a uniparty style government. So when you look at what does the average American get, and this is a really important thing, they get an inflated dollar because there's no control on spending. They get a government that's not accountable, so the FBI can arrest pastors in their home and call Catholics terrorists and spy on the American people without a warrant. That's what America is getting because we haven't held our own elected officials accountable. And now that's going to be harder to do because they're co-opting our actual election process. So we are in a very historical moment. Good news is people are waking up, and you can see it out in the generalized media. I mean, God, what was his name? Jake Tapper or whatever just said that America is the greatest country on the planet. And you're seeing a shift even in MSNBC and CNN where they confront people and say, you know, the border isn't secure. And we're seeing that suddenly on CNN of all places. So
yes.
What did the Biden administration do? They're going to build 27 miles of fence. That is because they have polling information that says Americans aren't buying it and Americans are biding their time.
Yeah.
So we have a great country. We just need conservatives and good family valued people from all parties and walks of life to get out and vote and participate. It will be enough to move the dial. It'll overcome any of the malfeasance in the election.
Yeah. Oh, and, you know, when it comes to the establishment and the uniparty, I think the firing of McCarthy sends a pretty strong message. And so let's hope it does. You know, we have been talking about trust. Now we're going to talk about the lack of it. Real examples of fraud and why you should not trust the election until something changes. That's next. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today with Mark Thielman. He is an activist working with several groups on issues like election integrity and getting real school choice on the 2024 ballot. And, you know, when it comes to having trust in the election system, is there any reason to think people who claim, oh, it's 100% foolproof and 100% trustworthy, don't have some kind of vested interest when they want to stop people from looking into it? Because it seems to me the best way to have distrust in the system is for people who got elected say, trust us, there was no fraud, and if you try to look, we'll sue you to prevent you from looking.
Well, yeah, that is the government's mantra, if you will. So it is as we say, so please do as we say, right? Rules for thee, not for me.
That's right.
I think people are starting to figure this out. I mean, when people take the ballot hand counting course and they find out just how easy and accurate and all the checks and balances, it really does create dialogue. And I've run into it all over the state. I was just over in Baker County last weekend at the Take Back Oregon tour, and we had speakers from all over the country coming in. And I was very honored to be the only Oregon-based speaker, asked to speak in the panel. And, it was fun listening to people who hail all over from West Virginia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, all over the country. It's no different everywhere else, but it's worse here in Oregon. And that's what they got to see when they heard me speak.
Mm.
And that's what Oregonians need to understand, that this is a government who literally will say that their job is to protect your children from you.
Yeah.
That is coming. And we see that. So now is the time to step up, and we have to set appropriate boundaries. The government lies. We need to agree on that. We have a massive amount of historical data that proves that. And yet we have universities teaching kids that the government never lies and can never be wrong. It doesn't pass the smell test. So we have to step up as conservatives. We have to say the country was founded in 1776. There are only two genders. If you're confused about your gender, we have lots of help and support for you to help you work through that. We need to have boundaries like that. Why? Because they've worked for 200 years. And what we're doing now is we're saying nothing is meaningful. Everything's your own individual truth. And the government is the only unifying entity that can protect you and get good things done for society. And, such a lie. It's so wrong. The 20th century stands as an epitaph to why you don't vote that kind of mentality in.
Right.
And which is why I'm excited. That's why I'm an activist. It's the pendulum has swung. Now you've got good, conservative, well-educated, articulate people, just like the ones I hung out with last weekend. And they're, we're all out educating people. And I'm telling you, it's working. It doesn't matter if you're left or right. I've seen people from every walk of life. We all want the same thing. We want to live our lives. We want to have opportunity and prosperity. We want the government to leave us alone. And we don't want to be inordinately burdened with heavy taxes or overly regulated in our travel, a.k.a. tolls, or told that we have only one option to put our kid in unless we're rich.
Yeah.
Because after all, that's not a reasonable society. So I'm just kind of framing it for you. That's the pendulum, the momentum that's going on in this state.
Right.
And if we can beat them here in Oregon, the whole country will follow.
Yes.
This is the battleground right here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, the reason we're talking about election solutions today and about restoring trust in the elections process is because there really are examples of fraud out there and sometimes pretty blatant ones. And you guys have certainly uncovered a number of them in your lawsuit that we've covered in the past with both you and with Chuck Weiss as well. But it was interesting. I have one much closer to home. Polk County Republicans sent out the minutes from their recent meeting, and it included this bit of discussion about some canvassing that they had done. And I'd hope to talk to somebody to dig a little bit deeper into this, but apparently they have pneumonia, and I didn't hear from them before airtime here. But here's just the raw data that they had uncovered. A Polk County canvassing group visited 173 addresses. At 81 of them, someone answered the door. And out of those 81, 73 households had vote discrepancy. 73 out of 81, that's 90.1%. And even if you use 73 out of 173, that's 42.2%. And additionally, they uncovered that there were 117 phantom voters at those households, which is 1.4 phantoms per those 81 households. How on earth can a 90% error rate or even a 42% error rate be considered acceptable and trustworthy by anyone in the election system?
Well, just so you know, the government will say we can't accept any of that data because it wasn't collected by our experts. Okay? Just so you know. Now, I've talked to the Polk County people and met with them down at the Honky Tonk in Salem. And so I got a sneak peek at that data. And what I want people to understand is that you don't have to be a rocket scientist. Go and canvass and do a good job. They asked all the same questions of every house they went to. They had it drilled down very well. They had been trained and by experts, good conservative experts who just want the truth. And that 90% discrepancy, when you never update your voter rolls, remember those houses were selected as targets, if you will. The data said these would be good houses to look at. There's some concerning things. And 99 out of 10 of those houses had those concerning things. This is a smoking gun in a conservative county, ironically,
yes.
Polk County.
Yes.
And this is why conservatives have to run for office in their local county and take over the local everything, county commissioner, water board, school boards, library boards. This is what has to happen because the minority liberal folks, they tend to be the ones running for office. I don't know if you've noticed that. But that's changing. And so look what happens in that little county. Now, if it's that bad in Polk County, where there's people that do care about election integrity, how bad is it in Multnomah County up in the Portland area?
Yeah, or Lane County, for that matter. Yeah, I know that's a county that you guys had covered pretty well, and there was all sorts of fraud there. While you've got your election integrity lawsuit, there was some news this week that might help you. And it's from the Federalist. It's an article titled "Colorado Tried to Throw Out an Election Watchdog's Lawsuit Seeking Registration Data. A Judge Said No." And it goes on to say a lawsuit to obtain Colorado's ERIC data reports concerning registered voters identified as deceased or potentially deceased may proceed if federal district judge ruled on Friday. So just as with your case, the Secretary of State there in Colorado also wanted to hide the voter database. And she said it was against state law to reveal dead or potentially dead voters, thousands of dead voters on the rolls. What could possibly go wrong with that?
Well, again, it's not about concealing dead or dead voters. It's about saying we're the good guys. We're protecting people's private information. Now, just so the audience understands. And if I sound facetious, I'm being. Here it is. Do you know what the number one source for hackers of illicit compromising data, what entity is the number one source of hackers that they target the most? It's not Amazon. It's not the whatever Pacific source, healthcare. It's the government. All across the world, governments are the number one leakers of people's private information. So it is absolutely hypocritical for a Secretary of State in Colorado to say, we've got to protect people's information even when they're deceased.
Well, it's just crazy. I mean, when you've got thousands of dead voters on the voter rolls, how does that not add mistrust to the system? Okay, let's take a break. Coming up, we're going to be talking about one election solution that a lot of counties across the U.S. are going back to, hand counting. I recently attended a training about this to see it for myself, and there's an upcoming demonstration you can attend. That's next with Mark Thielman. Talk today to Mark Thielman, an advocate and an activist for education, for real school choice for parents. He's the chief petitioner for that and for election integrity, especially solutions to bring back trust in our system to ensure it is fair and honest. To find out more about election integrity, you can visit his website, battlegroundoregon.org, battlegroundoregon.org, and we'll put that along with other links important to today's show in the show notes. And today's show is 13-40. And, Mark, a lot of people would like to see a return to hand counting ballots. Others say it is less reliable and more prone to errors than machine counting. So let's start with that latter argument. Are machines foolproof? And if not, how have we gotten the sense that they're infallible?
Well, if machines were foolproof, we'd all have confidence in them now, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
So the answer is absolutely not. They're computerized. So, you have analog machines that aren't computerized, and those are the first machines used. Those had more confidence. And then, of course, when you hook them up to the internet and you have proprietary software, those generate the least amount of confidence.
Yeah.
And, a machine company will say, well, our machines are very accurate. Well, that's fine, but it begs the question, are they accurate in terms of weeding out fraud or being able to determine when somebody's ballot's been switched or when somebody's marked a ballot by hand to cause some kind of compromise so that it gets adjudicated? That's where machines really fall short. Hand counting does a better job of preventing those kinds of errors and anomalies. And not to mention, it puts a lot more eyes on the same ballots through the same process.
Yep.
So it's a complete misnomer and lie, obviously. You need more volunteers. But I think people will volunteer.
Sure. I absolutely think so. And, this last Sunday, as I mentioned going out of that last segment there, I went to a hand counting training with Linda Rance, who spearheaded a real hand count in Osage County, Missouri. And it was really extremely interesting. And what I liked best about it was that trust was built into that system, which I'll come back to in a minute. But basically, it works this way. There are four people at a table, two Democrats and two Republicans, both of them paired up. So you got one Republican and one Democrat on each side of the table. One pair reads the ballots and the other ones keep track. The ones keeping track have essentially these bingo cards, and workers use different colored felt tip markers. Yes, those dreaded felt tip markers that we heard about in Arizona. And the cards have columns with sequential numbered fill-in bubbles to keep track. So the first bubble is one, the second two, three, and so on to 100. And they are given, this table is given a batch of completed ballots to work on. The ballots themselves have printed numbers by the names of the candidates for the yes or and for the yes or no on issues. The entire ballot is numbered sequentially. So any potential choice always has a unique corresponding number. And in section one, where, for example, there may be five candidates for president, there's a one by Trump, a two by Biden, and three for the Libertarian, and so on. In the next segment, section for, say, governor, the numbers continue sequentially. So it's 6, 7, 8 and so on into the next section for Secretary of State, 10, 11, 12 and so on and so forth through all of the different candidates. For ballot measures, it's the same idea. A yes would be, say, 54 and a no would be 55. So you have the people reading the ballots. They read the number next to the person that the voter had voted for, with their partner looking on to make sure that the right number was called out. The people keeping track mark the numbered bubble and the column for that number. And when the batch of ballots is done, those taking the tally write down the number of the last filled in numbered bubble at the bottom. In other words, the total votes for that candidate or issue. They then lay the two sheets on top of one another so the vote totals are showing to verify that the totals match in each column. If they match and there's no discrepancy, one is labeled as the official count and the other as a backup. If there's a discrepancy, the team then goes back through the ballots to find the error and correct the total so that they match. The paperwork and ballots for that batch are then gathered together and put into an envelope, and the totals are also put into the logbook, where there is a running subtotal for each of the batches, which will then be totaled for a grand total when all of the batches are done. Workers are encouraged to take pictures of the final, which shows the subtotals of the battle, the subtotals of the batches. The official tally and the batches with the ballots are then separated and sent by two different cars with a Democrat and a Republican in each car. That way, if someone wanted to stuff in some ballots, and you'd have to intercept both cars because each car is carrying the total. And if one doesn't match, you know that fraud was had occurred somewhere along the way. Plus, the poll workers have those pictures of the originals. And because they use different colored felt markers, any bad actors would have to know the color that they had used. And using those felt markers, it prevents somebody from faking it with a laser printer because felt bleeds through to the backside and the laser printers do not. And so that's kind of the very long short of it. Did I miss something, or would you care to add or highlight anything?
No, I think that was a brilliant and very accurate assessment of the checks and balances. You know, it's amazing because biblical scholars, archaeologists, they've known that for thousands of years, documents were hand copied in monasteries and libraries in the Muslim world and the Christian world, and they were done so with few, if any, errors. And that's as long before machines or, you know, IBM copiers or Xerox or any of that. So what I'm getting at is it shows you what human beings are capable of coming up with when you have multiple people creating a system with bad actors in mind. That's the difference between hand counting and machines.
Yes.
Machines cannot discern bad actors. They cannot do it. It comes down to people.
Yep.
And unfortunately, we have a government in Oregon that refuses to accept that anyone in government might be a bad actor, which is mind-boggling to me. I mean, look at the 20th century. You know, 100 million people killed between Mao Zedong and Joseph Stalin, all at the hands of the government. I would argue that there were some bad actors in those governments.
Yeah, Mark. Right.
So that being said, what you just gave should give everyone hope that returning to hand counting will restore a tremendous amount of confidence in our election.
Well, having watched it myself, I had a few doubts going into it. How accurate is this going to be? What's the process? How long is it going to take? I could see that, you know, you hear about all of the different arguments against this, but I had those in mind going into it, but it really did make me think this is totally doable. And also I truly loved the trust that was built into that. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in the next segment. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Mark Heelman.
Get a little more intelligence on big government. You're listening to the iSpy Radio Show.
And welcome back. We're talking about solutions for the election, and we're doing that with Mark Heelman. He is one of Oregon's most active activists. He's got a lawsuit right now, an election integrity lawsuit that's being scheduled for early December in the Ninth Circuit. And so, Mark, in that last segment, we were talking about the hand counting process. And as I said, I was really impressed by that. And I got a chance to talk a little bit to the presenter, and we're trying to have her on the show in a few weeks here. I know she's busy traveling right now. But one of the things that she addressed to everybody was the aspect of cheating, because that's one of the big things you hear about it. Oh, well, people can cheat doing this. Well, they can also do it with machines, as you rightly pointed out. The difference, though, with this one, I thought, is the fact that you've got so many more people involved and so many more eyes on it. It would be very hard to have people cheat. Yes, it could be done, but in a room of 10 tables, you would need 40 people to all agree to cheat.
Yeah, exactly.
Versus what happens with a machine, and all you need is one hacker to hack in.
Yep. Machine counting is more vulnerable to fraud, to corruption, than hand counting for that very reason. And our government doesn't want to be bothered to bring in 40 caring good actors who want to have integrity in their elections. That's how corrupt our government has become. They're lazy. They've lost sight of their role and their purpose, which is to maintain the confidence of the people. Remember, America is designed. We govern, or that government is limited by the consent of the governed. And they're failing in that. That is the basis. If we don't have fair, open, honest, integuous elections that create confidence among both winners and losers in the populace, then we're not free. We might as well be Venezuela or Iran.
That's right.
Or communist China.
Yeah, before you know it, you're going to start trying to arrest your political opponents. I mean, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, I mean, who'd have thought? Yeah.
You know, you mentioned government being lazy, and that was one of the first things that I thought of as I was watching this, because it was messy to get started with. You've got people that have never experienced this. There were, I think there was 8 tables of 4 each, so you got 32 people all doing this all at the same time, and they're trying to figure this system out and how it all works. And I can really see why county clerks and government elections wouldn't like this system, because to do it, it would take some people skills to train them. Whether the clerks do it themselves, or what she was advocating for is the individual parties train these people, but it would take some man hours to figure that out. But again, once you go through it a couple of times, it was really actually very simple and straightforward. And but that was my impression, is that I think that's one of the reasons why government wouldn't like this, is just because it's going to involve dealing with people, and we know that they don't like to deal with people.
Well, that's the comedy of it, because they are elected by the people
to deal with
people.
That's exactly right. Well, one of the other complaints that you hear is that it's just too costly. And, of course, that's not true. You're paying millions and millions of dollars of taxpayer funds for these machines, the software, the updates, the trainings that are involved with that, and all the rest. And so that's tens of millions of dollars for the average state. And these are volunteers that are doing this. And so I actually did ask her, I had a little bit of private time with her. I asked her, I said, so has anyone, let's say, for example, instead of volunteers, you paid people $15 an hour to be there, including the training time to do that. And have you guys ever done a cost analysis if you paid people to do this versus the millions that the state is paying for these machines and all the rest? And she said, yes, in fact, they had. And it's kind of hard because they couldn't get their hands on all of the numbers that the state uses. And in fact, some of them seem to be kind of hidden in terms of actual costs. But the numbers that they boil it down to, it would actually save that county that they did it in $400,000.
Sure. Because they lie. Remember, these are for-profit companies providing these machines. That county clerks now, under the auspice of the Secretary of State, not by law, but through rule, where the Secretary of State has basically ceded, or the legislature has ceded the power to unelected bureaucrats. The Secretary of State says you're all going to use machines, even though the law allows them to each county to choose. That is a fact. Okay, I believe it's ORS 245, some digits after that. I don't remember the specific, but I believe that's the ORS. And again, it's our government lying to us. Every county clerk can choose to do this hand counting system and implement it. And the money they save in not using the machines can more than pay for any of the costs for the hand count. What's confidence and integrity worth, Mark?
Exactly.
How much should we pay for that? Should we pay as much as we're paying to Ukraine? I think it's worth even more than that.
Yeah. Well, the other impression I had looking at that is, why is this not being put on for these county clerks? I would love to see this kind of demonstration being put on for county clerks, so they come in and they can see that a lot of the myths that they believe about hand counting are easily dispelled, and that it really is that much more trustworthy.
Well, it's real simple. We just need to invite them to come to the event on the 14th,
yes,
where there's going to be another training, and I'm going to be speaking at that. Joel Oltman, also from Colorado, good connection to the previous part of the story there. He's coming to talk about issues going on in Colorado and why hand counting is the solution. So I think it'll be a great event for people if they want to turn out. And you know what? I'm going to personally invite the county election clerk from Marion County to join us. I wonder if he'll show up.
I was actually going to ask you that in the next segment, whether or not you have sent out those invitations to the county clerks, because I would love to see them there. They really should be there. Let's go ahead and take a break a little bit early, and coming up, we'll be wrapping things up with Mark, and we'll be talking about that event in a little bit more detail. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now with Mark Thielman. He is an active activist working with several groups on issues like election integrity and getting real school choice on the 2024 ballot. And we've been talking about solutions to elections and to getting trust back into the system. And, you know, just to revisit the hand counting that we were talking about in that last segment, that was one of the things I think that truly impressed me was the various fail safes that they had built into that, where you've got these different checks so that if the tallies don't match, you go back and it's easy to figure out where the discrepancies lie. You've got people looking over each other's shoulders. And yes, I could see where there could be some potential for human error. In fact, I witnessed that on several occasions. Somebody had written the number 7 in the 7 column rather than the actual total, you know, just flat out human error. You could have transcription, other kind of types of transcription errors and whatnot. But because you had those fail safes there, that really made the whole system that much more transparent. And because you've got transparency with all of those people in the room, with all of those eyes on it, with everybody being able to agree, these are in fact the totals, that really did build that trust into the system, even if there's errors, because you can then go back. You know, it's like you admit that there is the potential for human error, but you've found ways to mitigate that to be able to go back and fix them.
Well, it shows you the strength of the system. That isn't that how human beings are wired? That mistakes get made, but we have fail safes, and then everybody joins in remediating the mistake. And what happens is that it creates a group consensus where you have even more confidence because you went through that process. Mistakes were made, they were caught, they were corrected, and now we all have agreement on the integrity of the results. Why would we trade that for a company like Dominion that sells machines in Venezuela, a very known corrupt country that uses machines to make sure that the one party stays in power? Why would we trade that kind of interaction for machines? That's my question. I'd love to hear Tina Kotek, our governor, answer that.
Yeah. And by using those machines, you don't have those eyes on the system. It's scanned through the machine. You just have to trust that it's correct on the other side of things, not knowing whether or not there was some software inserted to switch votes. We certainly heard a lot about that in the 2020 election, that votes were being switched. But the other aspect, too, that I really liked is you're there with your neighbors at these polling positions. You're there with Democrats and Republicans. You've got those people working together to get to that final solution there and to get to the final tally. And that itself, I think, having that bridge between the two parties, I think that also builds trust.
Well, it does. And, you know, we're getting back to humanizing our elections again, instead of creating division and distrust and dehumanization of our elections, which is what our government, through the use of these machines, has done. It's critical. We cannot surrender the actual human aspects of our republican democracy, if you will, to convenience, laziness, and trust in some other outside entity. No one knows that entity. No one can put a pin on that entity, and that entity won't tell us the truth if they're called to the carpet. So that's what we've done. I think we've had enough examples of why we need to go back to hand counting. You are living proof as to why it can be done and why it should be done. And it goes way beyond just counting ballots. It goes back to Democrats and Republicans working together again. And we need to get back to that.
Yeah.
That is what, you know, the disagreement under a umbrella of unity used to be the norm in this country, where we may disagree, but we're unified on some basic things. We all love our kids. Mm. We have a great country. There's opportunity in America, and we don't want to lose that. I mean, you know, I could go on and on, but that's what we have to get back to. And returning to hand counting helps restore just that.
Yes, I completely agree with that. And you are putting on a demonstration. This is going to be on October 14th. This is a demonstration of hand counting, so people can go. You're not necessarily going to be trained, but you'll see this live and in action. The event is October 14th. That's a Saturday. It's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's being held at the Scottish Rite Center, which is at 4090 Commercial Street in Salem. And so talk to us a little bit about more about this event. You kind of teased it in that last segment.
Well, the goal is to, once again, get interested people there, get them educated, create awareness. And naturally, they're trying to draw crowds. They brought in some very, very charismatic speakers. One is myself, and far beyond me, in my opinion, because I'm a big fan of his, and that's Joe Altman from Colorado. Joe Altman was one of the first cyber kind of characters, independently, by the way, on his own, to uncover some of the fraud that's now been proven in Colorado. And he paid a dear price for that, but now he's a national figure, and he's out educating people all over the country. He is a fascinating guy to listen to.
I should also mention this is a spaghetti dinner, so it's a luncheon. There is a cost, $13 per person. If you'd like to RSVP to that, they would appreciate that. It's just head to cleanvoterrolls.com, cleanvoterrolls.com. And Mark, did you have anything else to add to that?
No, I just hope to see anyone there, and come, bring your neighbors, bring your friends, but even more importantly, if you are coming, bring a skeptic.
Yes.
If you can get a skeptic to come with you,
that would be great.
That's powerful.
That would be great. And, you know, I know that you had mentioned that you're going to send out an invitation to county clerks. What about inviting the Democrat Party to come?
Well, I think I might, especially in Marion County. Wouldn't that be fun? That's not hard to do. So consider that done. I will get on that right away.
All right. All right, Mark, that's all our time for today. I want to thank you so much for being here and for everything that you're doing to restore some integrity and some faith and trust in our elections.
Well, thanks for having me, you guys.
That training I attended for hand counting was recorded, and from what I understand, it will be made available. I'm just not sure if it's going to be put on a public outlet like Rumble.com or another video outlet, or if it's going to be made available only upon request. We'll let you know once we find out. I also believe, again, not sure, I believe they will be doing these trainings in other areas around the state. We will let you know if we hear of others, and I would highly encourage you to go watch and learn. We need to be able to get back to having some trust in the system. We need to be able to trust people across the political aisle. This is something that can start bringing people together again. But keeping the process under lock and key, as long as the state continues to sue people who ask for information, trust will never happen, nor should it. Most of all, we really need to get back to trusting the outcomes. And we do that by not fuming on the sidelines, but by taking an active role when we can. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.